we start today's episode, just to let you know, you can now nominate for the 2025 Northern Power Women Awards to be in with a chance of celebrating with changemakers, trailblazers and advocates on the 6th of March 2025. Nominate now at wearepower.net.
Power Women Podcast. For your career and your life, no matter what business you're in.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the Northern Power Women Podcast, where we spotlight the remarkable, amazing, inspiring individuals who use their power for good every day in the aim of reaching the more equal, diverse, and inclusive world. And this week, I am going to chat to the wonderful, literally wonderful, wonderful, wonderful Zandra Moore, double award like winner, actually, or double award commended at the Northern Power Women Awards, one of our real rare ones who was commended this year for our outstanding entrepreneur. Zandra is queen tech entrepreneur in data, passionate about enabling more women into the tech industry. Round of applause right there, and cheerleading and like Mexican wave. Zandra is the co-founder and CEO of Pan Intelligence, the No Code Lab, and Lean In Leeds. Zandra is obviously involved in juggling lots of other things, involved in a number of UK organisations focusing on increasing female rep in tech as well, and is also a member of the UK government's task force for diversity in fast growing companies. Thank you, Zandra. Thank you for taking the time. You always are so amazing. You're so busy, but you will always make time to jump in a chat or jump in to support what we're doing at MPW. Thank you.
Pleasure, as always.
And you were commended this year for Outstanding Entrepreneur in the MPW Awards. What did that mean to you? Because you are someone who's very accoladed, if even that is a word.
It always feels amazing when someone says your name, and always a massive surprise. So honestly, didn't expect to get the highly commended at all. I don't know, it's just lovely, isn't it, that people sort of give you that pat on the back. As an entrepreneur, you're quite lonely at the top, and you always have imposter syndrome. Well, for the rest of my life, always have imposter syndrome. I always go, how have we got here? Really? Me? So it's a lovely feeling when somebody just acknowledges that, and you get that kind of recognition. But it's always the same old, and people do say, I say it every time, it really isn't just about me. You know, an entrepreneur is about her team, his team, and the people that enable you to be successful. It's all about the people around you, and whether that's your friends, your family, or the people that you work with. So it can be lonely at the top, but you don't make it to the top without an awful lot of support and a lot of help. So I tend to like bringing it back to the team, because the team makes the team feel really excited that they're still being sort of recognised for the doing. So yeah, it's always brilliant.
And you've talked about that loneliness of the top, because as an entrepreneur, you're the accountant, you're the personnel director, you're the cleaner, you're all of those kind of things. You've talked about your family and friends. Are there any other sort of tactics or that you've adopted over the years to ensure you're not in isolation?
Well, you know, just before you started the podcast recording, we had a quick chat, didn't we? A sneaky chat about some of the wonderful, wonderful female power tribe that I lean into at every opportunity, especially when things are going hard, right? And we celebrate success together, but actually we do talk about the tough stuff. So yeah, I think there is a very special community of women that I'm surrounded by that are on the journey with me, and, you know, entrepreneurs, senior business leaders that really kind of get the things that you get. I would say that they're my kind of engine room of energy and motivation when things are hard. It's why, you know, what you do is so important. It's why I said Lean In Leeds. It's why I really want to advocate for having more peers. And I think as women and entrepreneurs, especially female tech entrepreneurs, we're still a real scarcity. So finding each other can be quite hard, but when you do, God, you cling on hard. And we do. I mean, God, I remember in lockdown, we would have our weekly kind of, always with a glass of gin or wine.
That was 8 a.m, right?
Oh my God, we got each other through the lockdown. It was shocking. It was absolutely shocking. We just needed each other so badly because we weren't around each other. But they got me through some really tough periods when you're in a room all day, every day, looking at a screen, try to keep your team motivated, get your team through what's hard for them too. They're locked in homes where maybe they don't have any control over certain situations they're in, where they're maybe homeschooling, where they've got vulnerable adults around them. Everyone's very scared. So you could put on your brave face and being sort of at the top and supporting people, but you actually do need those groups where you can be a bit kind of vulnerable and have a good cry. I had some really good cries in lockdown into that camera. I really did. So yeah, I think my female power tribe, the wonderful women that know who they are, yeah, they're my foundation. My foundation, definitely.
Just talking, the first time I really came across you was not around entrepreneurship. It was around Lean In and around the work that you're doing about Lean In Leads. And Lean In obviously sort of was very much alongside the book that Sheryl Sandberg released all those years ago. I mean, we're talking 2 decades now, or a decade and a half since that book came out. But just talk to me about why you set that. You know, you've talked about what it does for you now, and what, you know, that tribe that you have around you. But where was that motivation for you to sort of step out and go, right, do you know what, I'm going to crack on and set this up?
Yeah, so it's a male co-founder, actually, who'd read the book and, you know, said, you need to read this. You're really going to love it. It says a lot about my co-founder, right? And I read it, and at the back of the book, it said, you know, you can set up a circle. Of course, she's the CEO of Facebook, so they've set up a social community. And I looked for one, and there wasn't one in Leeds. And I thought, well, I'll just go and see if there's other women like me that have read the book, and we'll get together and have a coffee. That's really what I thought was going to happen. And at the time, you know, I'd only recently become the CEO, and I was really, really quite nervous about calling myself CEO. I hadn't even put it on my email signature. I had this massive kind of, I can't call myself a CEO, I can't, you know. Really struggled with it. I just wanted to meet other senior women and see if they felt like I felt. And the first meetup we had 20 odd people, and it's got a community now. We're sort of, I mean, 8 years in, something like that, maybe even 9 years. 1,500 women. 1,500. You know, I didn't run it anymore. I mean, I ran it for many years, but it's got a board now. It's got a chair that runs it, and lots of other kind of subgroups, and somebody goes across to America every year and joins the Lean In kind of meetups. And it's like this whole big thing now. But honestly, I set it up selfishly just because I wanted to see if other people felt like I felt in the shoes that I was in. And they did. And we had really good quality conversations about how to overcome it and how other people had kind of had conversations with other people or dealt with situations. And I just thought, God, this is so powerful to have a safe space to just be vulnerable and talk about those feelings that you have when you suddenly find yourself with a lot of responsibility and know people maybe that you know like you. So that was great. And it's grown and grown and grown, mostly through the magic of Claire Ackers now, who's the chair, and the team of people she's built around it. We run mentoring programs, we run an annual awards. There's nowhere near as impressive as what you do, Simone. I mean, you are like the godmother of all things women empowerment in the north of England. But as our small microcosmic contribution to the ecosystem, you know, I think it shows you, doesn't it, that 1,500 women still want to be part of something, that there's a problem still and people still feel like they need that community. So, no, the momentum hasn't gone away from it, but I'm a long way off sort of in it in the way I used to be. I've got my tribe now and I lean into my tribe, but I needed to find it.
That's great, and that's lovely for you to say that. But to be honest, Northern Power Women, I always think is a hub and almost a celebration of other things going on. I always think it's a collective, if you like, you know. So
we're sisterhood, right? We're sisterhood of female empowerment networks, and we love each other to death. And that's right, that's the way it should be, right? And I think women are brilliant at that as well. Women are so good at backing each other and lifting each other up and leaning into each other in a way that there just isn't that kind of competition. They start with collaboration, they start with support, they start with community. And even the female community leaders, just like people think, oh, you know, would we have a problem because we're doing similar things? God, even slightly. I'm just, you know, I deeply admire you, love you to bits. And if we support each other in kind of raising this agenda, then that makes us all win. So I think women are really good at collaborating and working together, which is why networks and communities of women, I think, work so effortlessly. You know, really do, in my experience, they just put people together and magic happens, it seems.
Absolutely. And I always think it's not about being monogamous about one set community. You can play out in different communities depending on who you want to be on that given day. But you talked about women a lot, but actually at the start of the conversation about Lean In, you talked about your co-founder being a male. Good heavens. I believe they're half the sky too. But talk to me about that advocacy, the fact that he sort of sent you the book and went, this is for you. Advocacy so key, and that male allyship.
Alec, you know, I've got some incredible male allies now that, in fact, every time I go to events where I'm at dinners, and men increasingly show a huge amount of interest in this agenda, and I hear more often than not, if there's anything I can do to help, if there's any way I can support, what I often hear is them going, I want to, but I don't know how. They almost like need to be given permission to become advocates. And they, you know, like, if we, people don't often feel that they have a right if they are not in the shoes of that person. So if you've got a minority group that that you want to support and you're not part of that minority group, in any context, you can often feel like, have I got a right to be in there supporting? And I think a lot of people feel that way. It's a very natural response. And I think a lot of men want to be in this agenda. We've got to help them to find their place in that. We've got to invite them, and we've got to give them a purpose in that and tell them that absolutely we want you at the table. You know, I don't want to be on panels that are, you know, all women. I want to be on 50-50 panels, right? I want to be on diverse panels. And I think women events need to make sure the men are in the room. Actually, we lose something by them not being in the room. So now I'm a big fan of making sure that we find a better way to bring them into the conversation so they know that they have a place there, that they feel that they understand their role. Because unless you give people a role, they'll feel a bit uncomfortable, rightly so. I mean, that's part of the problem, right? I don't want to walk into a room of just one group of people. Why would they?
So, and we created this year as part of the awards a male advocacy list. So we've had powerless, futurelist, and we created intentionally this year. I've never seen the need to have like a, I don't want woman of the year, because we've got hundreds and hundreds of them, and I want to keep growing that, if you like. And I didn't want a man of the year award, but actually we've created this advocacy list, and the whole premise of that is it's about exactly as you just talk. How can we start that community of, you know, supporting, to, because it is that I get sometimes, Simone, I don't know what to say, exactly as you just said, I don't want to say the wrong thing, so therefore I don't. So we want this to be,
do I have a right to have an opinion? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Do I have a right to actually be here? Like, God, yes, we need you in the room. How do we give you a role that makes you feel comfortable? How do we give you the narrative and the conversation and the language to use so that you feel comfortable? That is our job. Totally is our job. Yeah.
It is. It's a kind of interpreter sometimes. Let's take you back to the whole passion around entrepreneurship. And we have seen a growth over the last 3 years, but still haven't got that equality or parity between female and male entrepreneurs. Why not?
Oh, do you know, so I sit on a government task force that you mentioned at the start, and it's been a massive eye-opener. You sort of think you know why, and then you spend a lot of time in an organization, or in this case, a task force, where there's an awful lot of research, and you get exposed to a lot more of the data and the sort of the wider challenges that are the friction on creating more diversity, in this case, in high growth enterprises. And it's complicated. These things always are. You know, it's everything from the caring gap when it comes to women still carrying the majority of the caring responsibilities, whether that's for children or elderly parents, whatever that might be. And, you know, the lack of financial support for that, that's a real challenge. You know, that doesn't go away. The lack of diversity in the investment community. So therefore, people tend to invest more in the things that they understand and know. So that flows down to where the money goes. So unfortunately, if you don't know lots of people with money, and a lot of women don't tend to know entrepreneurs or high net worths in the way that men do, it can be harder to access that capital or get that first funding off the ground. Family and friends funding is often that first round of investment. So it's everything from access to capital, networks, the caring disparity, and role models. You know, if you do ask, if you actually ask entrepreneurs to name other female entrepreneurs, they struggle. And female entrepreneurs struggle to name other female entrepreneurs, especially if they're not networked into an ecosystem. So we do have lots of point issues. So we're trying to lean into that at the moment to understand where we can pull some levers. One of the biggest levers that I'm passionate about is the regional disparity. So when you look at investment into female-founded businesses, you know, it's shocking that it's 2% of all capital goes to female-founded businesses. That's bad enough. If you get out to the regions, it's like 0.1%. It gets, you know, it's really, really bad. Really, really, really bad. And so we've got, you know, the leveling up, or just whatever language people want to use for just that kind of regional disparity. So we have a gender and a regional kind of gap to fill. And I'm really passionate about how we get more of the women in the regions on the radar of investors access to capital, access to networks, access to each other, so that they can get the confidence and the connections they need to take those first brave steps into entrepreneurship. And actually, that's probably 90% of what's needed right now. The caring gap I can't do a lot about, you know, unless there's some support. But there's people like Ada Ventures. They're amazing. They've done the world's first Ada Ventures. They back female-founded tech startups, and they put a funding in place for any parent, male or female, that take parental leave at that startup stage to support their childcare arrangements. You know, that's a VC committing to childcare funding in their portfolio of companies. That's groundbreaking. And those are sort of creative things that we need to be thinking of doing to make sure those early entrepreneurs, if they've got young families and have a career break for any reason whilst they're starting their businesses, actually can afford to continue. And so, yeah, I could talk about this for days, Simone, so I shut up.
No, and I think this is something we need to keep the conversation going around this. So I think we need to pick back up on this at a later point. I can feel a webinar coming on. Sandra, thank you so much. No, but I think it's important. This is how we have to, you know, we have to kind of raise the awareness of this 0.1%. I wasn't aware of that statistic. I didn't think it was as low as that from a regional disparity. That's absolutely appalling, isn't it? You know,
it's... Yeah, high growth. Yeah, so capital going into high growth businesses, just the further up the funding cycle you go, actually the proportion of female-founded businesses is tinier and tinier, because actually the bigger the rounds, the bigger investment firms, actually there is just more and more women that don't sort of make it through. So, yeah, it's interesting. There's lots of stats, actually. I'm publishing a regional data project next year as part of the task force, which actually maps the entire investment ecosystem of female-led founded businesses across the UK, city by city. So you can actually see what those investment gaps are into what sector and the female founders as well in it. But you have to watch this space as much.
Brilliant. And it'd be great to like support on that in whatever way we can as well, Sandra. I think that'd be amazing. So you talked about almost that role model of entrepreneurs, female entrepreneurs, but what was your inspiration to becoming an entrepreneur?
So my inspiration to get into tech was my mum. I've talked a lot about my mum. Got to listen to anything I've ever talked about. I talk about my mum. She was a real role model. I was the benefit. I had a role model at home. I had somebody that was a real vanguard, got into the tech sector, knew nothing, single. You know, she was a eldest of seven children, a single parent family that just basically grafted and muscled her way into tech and did really well. And she was amazing. And so I wanted to be in tech. Entrepreneurship, I made a lot of other people very successful. And I watched their success, and I got to having my children, and I realized that I wanted to do that for them. I wanted to do it for myself, and I could, because I could see how it worked, because I'd been helping entrepreneurs to get successful in their own tech businesses. So I think I just believed when I had children that was when I needed to do it. And it created me the flexibility at the same time with small children. So it was a bit of a having kids and realizing I could probably use the flexibility of entrepreneurship to give me the time I needed to be able to be there for my children, but also start something for myself. And that was the kick I needed. There wasn't a person, but certainly being around other entrepreneurs for the first 10, 12 years of my career, watching their success was definitely made me believe I could do it myself.
And your daughter, did you bring your daughter to the awards this year?
I did. Yeah, she's 17, and I loved bringing her to the awards. She absolutely loved it, and because it's such a table of kick-ass women, I mean, God, what better environment for a 17-year-old to be in? To you know, you can only be what you can see, and actually just get your daughter surrounded by that, and it's brilliant. So that was wonderful. I mean, your children are never that impressed with you, are they? You're often more impressed at all. So, yeah, no, it was wonderful. She loved it. It was such a so inspiring, really inspiring for her. And she loved getting in the drop.
Hell yes. And she's inspired you, hasn't she, to create opportunities around football?
For my sins, I foolishly became a football coach 8 years ago, having never kicked a football in my life and not knowing how to play the game. Because my daughter just had blind faith in me that I could do anything. I'm like, come on, Mum, I'm sick of playing with the boys. Let's set up the football team. So we did. Set up the first girls' football team in the area that we live. And it's really successful now. I mean, there must be seven age groups. Hundreds and hundreds of girls playing football every single weekend. But, you know, it was me and my daughter flyering schools about 7-8 years ago, trying to convince. I think our first training session, we had three. And then I did my FA coaching badge, and I convinced quite a few other mums to become coaches. You know, if I can coach football without any football experience, why can't you? So we've definitely created a pipeline of mums that believe they can coach. But it's like anything, you know, it's got to start somewhere with somebody. And why wouldn't it be me and my daughter? You know, why not? And but it was her that, I mean, honestly, if you'd have asked me 10, 12 years ago if I was coach football, I'd have laughed in your face. Gone, me, never cooked. But it's been brilliant. One of the best things I've ever done. It's so rewarding, coaching grassroots sport. And it isn't about skills. It is about how you build a team. It's so much about what I do in my day job at work. It's just about people and supporting them in the right way. And then just, you know, they teach each other, really.
And final question, because I could talk to you forever. But to be honest, this seems to be a real repetition across your career. Yeah, you come across a problem. There isn't a solution, so you just set one up.
And I often look at them and go, well, it's dead simple. You just do this, this, and this. I can go from problem to solution in my head rapidly. I'm dyslexic, and I do think when you've got a certain type of brain, you just see patterns that other people don't see, or you see a path to solving a problem sometimes faster. And I just, it often looks really simple to me. Well, let's just do it. And I'm a bit JFDI as well. My COO, Charlie, who's incredible. She's like, she's a ex-fighter pilot, the RAF, and she's just incredible. But she makes sure that the chaos that I create has some structure behind it, because I love to take action and I love to get things done. And actually, I think most of problems are solved by just having a go and don't worry too much about having it absolutely, you know, planned out. Just get on with it and see what happens and work out as you go. And I'm sure, Simone, that's how you started yours.
100%. Driven 100% by impatience and the ability that I can just JFDI to. So.
And I just have good people around you to put behind you and make sure that it's, and that's the key, really. I think you can't be a starter and a setter-upper and a JFDI-er without great people around you to make sure that you continue to deliver. And that is finding your tribe. I always keep going back to it. Surrounding yourself with amazing people. I'm not a solo entrepreneur. I have an incredible team behind me that makes sure that I can continue to do these things. Without them, I probably wouldn't. So finding your tribe, there's one thing I'd say to just find your tribe. When you've got them, then, you know, you can achieve it.
And issue them all with a set of trainers to keep up.
Yeah, maybe.
Oh, Zandra, amazing, amazing. I love every conversation that we have. Thank you so much for kind of carving in some time for us today. Please keep being you. Superpower, your sort of ability just to problem solve and crack on is your superpower. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
And thank all of you for listening. Please head over to wearepower.net where you can find out about everything that we've got going on in We Are Power, Northern Power Women Power Collective world. Whether you want to mentor, whether you want to get involved in our webinars, whether you just want to sort of go and look at some of the amazing role models that we've got on the platform, please do. And we'd love to hear from you. Get in touch in our socials at North Power Women on Twitter or X or whatever, and Northern Power Women on all the others. Thank you so much for listening. We look forward to have my next conversation next week, where I'll be speaking to yet another kick-ass, probably impatient, trainer-wearing Northern Power Woman. And my name is Simone. This is the Northern Power Women Podcast, a What Goes On Media production.